Nerd alert.
Dork face.
I am not a loser. I just have a bad haircut.
Kind of a major dork.
Oh, nerds.
If you're into science, tech, or unique hobbies, you're listening to the right show on Get Nerdy With It. We interview nerds talking about their passions. This is Get Nerdy With It.
Welcome to Get Nerdy With It, episode 34, recorded on Thursday, March 27th, 2014. I'm Jennifer Ruggiero and your host. And tonight we have two co-hosts with us. Mr. Andrew Nelson is back.
Hi, how are you? It's been a while.
It's been a while. How's it going?
Not too bad. I'm glad that work is finally calming down a little bit. I've been doing like 50 to 60 hours a week for the past month or so now.
Your schedule has been insane as of late. Have you moved into your new place?
Nope. Just put down the deposit today. Today, right? Yep. I lose track of my days when I'm working nights, but yes, it was today. So it starts April 1st, but they said I could go in anytime, so I'll probably move in this weekend.
Oh, sweet. That's great. You'll have to send us some pictures when it's done, when you have fully decorated and put your Archer calendar up on the wall.
Absolutely.
And we have a new co-host to invite to the show tonight, and he is a good friend of mine and a tech guru and an all-around geek, so I thought he'd make a great addition to the team. His name is Christopher Gagnon. Or actually, I don't know, Chris, you pronounce your last name different ways. I say Gagnon because it looks French to me, but other people say Gagnon. Well, how do you say it?
Well, Jen, it really depends on how pretentious I'm feeling at the time. Or what part of the country or world I'm in. I answer to everything.
I know you do. Yeah. Well, I'm going to say Gagnon. Mr. Gagnon.
Perfect.
I like it. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Welcome to the show. I'm really, really happy that you're here.
This isn't Joe Rogan experience, is it? You lied to me.
Well, we're grateful that the show is even going on. We've had a ton of technical difficulties for the past 45 minutes or so trying to get this up and running. Network issues, mic issues, it's crazy. But we're here, knock on wood, and hopefully we stay on. So we have an awesome guest, a great friend of mine, and he is a tech guru as well and just a marketing guru. He just knows it all, and I'm really happy to have him on, Vincent Brown from Vintuitive.com. Hello, Vincent.
Hi, Jen. And thank you for that lovely intro.
You're welcome.
Very kind.
How's it going?
Hi, really well, thanks. It's 11 o'clock in the morning here, so I'm in South Australia. And hello to Andrew and Christopher.
Hey, it's always a pleasure.
And I know you have a little duck in the background. Does he live in your yard, or is he just visiting you?
No, he flew in this morning on the early flight. I was surprised. I just woke up and I was checking the news, and we got so many different birds, carawongs and crows and magpies and finches and all sorts of things. But rarely do I hear a duck, and it's because we've got a botanic gardens a few kilometers away from here, and I reckon they fly in from there. But I don't know what the attraction is here. But a couple of times I've seen them across the road and they're in a neighbor's yard. So I guess that's where he is.
And then you also have kangaroos hopping around from time to time. I think you sent a picture once of one of your friends.
Yep. I've got a couple of resident koalas as well. I thought there was only one. And then I saw it had a baby on its back.
It was a koala. So, you know, you didn't send me the roo. Who sent me the picture of the roo? Wasn't you?
No, I don't remember sending you one. But I have, occasionally see kangaroos around here.
Maybe I think it was someone else. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But, the last time I saw the koala in the tree, it's like literally just 3 meters away from my front door. So I can actually turn around and see him sitting in the tree right through my front window.
That's so awesome.
Last time I went out, I thought, I'll take my camera out, take a few pictures because, you can literally reach up and touch it. It's that close.
Oh, my gosh.
And it wasn't until about 10 minutes after I'm sitting there filming and photographing that I realized there was another one in the same tree right behind it. And yeah, usually they're very territorial. So uh-huh. You don't usually see that. So I think that second one was actually the child that I saw a few months earlier.
Oh my God, how cute!
Yeah, but it's all grown up, and it was just as big as the mother. So I don't know. I mean, I don't really know how long they hang around for, but there he was.
That's great. All we have around here are birds. Like, I've seen an owl, you know, which is a bird, right? So that's about it. But
I saw an owl in our tree, in the same tree as the koala, about a year ago, and I thought, what? Owls? We don't have owls. And I managed to actually get a photo of it, and later looked it up, and of course, it was a tawny frogmouth, which is sort of related to the owl family, but very weird. A baby had fallen out of the tree and was just on the ground, and it was just absolutely vulnerable. I don't know why the cats didn't just jump on it. But their defense is to act like a stick.
Interesting.
And yeah, they do actually look like a lot like a branch. So when they're sitting in the tree, they kind of blend in.
Yeah, they are hard to see. You're right.
Anyway.
And now I remember who sent me the kangaroo photo. It was Beverly Fairless, Andrew Cunningham's mother. on the Zarfo app, she sent it.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into the news, shall we?
Sure.
The first story that we have comes from Engadget.com, and it is millennials are watching video on tablets and computers more than TVs. That's not quite a shocker, but apparently today kids prefer to watch TV shows and movies on things other than an actual TV. According to a new study by Deloitte, 56% of what they call training millennials, which are people between the ages of 14 and 24, are tuning into their favorite shows on computers, smartphones, tablets, and gaming devices rather than television. And the majority, 32%, are watching on their computers, while just 7% are keeping up with the Kardashians on their tablets. And that's a major contrast from grandma's mature 67 plus age group, where 92% of the viewers are still watching via the traditional way on a regular television set. And the millennials aged 25 to 30 have 53% that are using the TV. And, you know, kind of curious to see what will happen when 4K TV makers come out, if they're going to continue to focus their efforts on large television sets, and when kind of the viewing trend is to go towards the more personalized handheld devices like your computer, your tablets, your phone, whatever it might happen to be. So wanted to get your thoughts on this, and let's see who should go first. Let's ask the new fella to the panel, Chris.
Well, Jen, the first thing I think about when I look at this is, I mean, it's interesting numbers, but I mean, what is it going to mean? Television is content driven, but it's obviously an advertising business. So, you know, what is the takeaway from this? And to me, it's that, you know, the time shifting that's been going on for so long is just going to continue. Mm-hmm. You know, I wonder if television as we know it is just going to kind of become an event sort of thing, sporting events, you know, singing competitions, things that are kind of live and that have that draw to it. And so then on the other side of that, I wonder, you know, when the content, you know, the makers, the people that are making these shows, when are they going to take the jump and really start programming for that screen, for the interactivity that's inherent in that screen? You remember when the TV makers, I don't know, several years ago were really pushing interactivity where you could vote with your remote and all that kind of thing. And that's all built into these devices. So, but other than, I mean, who's making shows for that? They're just taking advantage of all that. And they call it, the third screen, the second screen, that it's people are using these devices to augment their consumption of television. But I really don't think that's the case though. You know, it's a big deal that Netflix has a series. It's a big deal that whatever. But these are all just, they're just poking their toes in the water. And I think there's a space open for somebody to come in and do and do something really remarkable. And there's a lot of smart people in that business, so I'm anxious to see what it will be.
Yeah, that's you're right. That's definitely it's interesting with seeing the shift in this direction. If they will start to make, I guess maybe tailor content towards those devices, or what they will do to integrate advertising into that forum. And I guess right now they do that, you know, with Netflix or YouTube. You see the ads beforehand, and so they're doing a pretty good job with that now. Out of curiosity, what do you usually use to consume your television, to get your TV fix, your TV show / film fix?
That is the absolute worst question to ask me, because I don't do anything. I don't watch a lot of TV. Now, movies will just be Netflix and on the Xbox or on the laptop that's in the bedroom. But there's not a lot on TV that'll draw me there.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing that I think about is that they need to look at the fact that people that are consuming on these devices, I don't think that it's a thank you, Heidi, but I'm all good on popcorn. Sorry, that was.
I want some popcorn over
my
here.
Friend's daughter came to offer me pie. She's very sweet.
Yeah, tell her that I want some popcorn.
No, she'll try to throw it. Who knows? But there, I think that there's much more of a less of a linear. You know, it's more television, and you can see it in the way that they even wrote this paragraph. You know, cuddling up and their snuggies and all that. So it's like you're set. You're in this place, and there's this event happening. And you're watching it from start to finish. And if you watch kids, if you watch, you know, or training millennials, whatever, I mean, that's not how they're consuming this. They're consuming it in bits and pieces between, in the spaces in between the rest of their lives. And so I think that there's, I think that, you know, the arc of the storytelling is in a lot of these shows is going to have to change to reflect that too.
Yeah, well said. Well said. I'd like to get your input on it, Ben.
Well, there's a couple of aspects here and some assumptions that they're making. They're suggesting that the millennials are watching the same television programs that are available on the TV. I wonder actually how much of that is going on and as opposed to how much internet-related material such as YouTube, Vines, you know, there's a myriad of content online to watch that's not available on the TV. So is it TV that they're watching on their tablets and what's the percentage of that? I don't think the study goes into breaking it down into terms of what's available on the TV and what's available on the internet. And the other assumption is that when they finish there with the 4K TV makers, I mean, I don't think it's the screen size. I don't think the kids are choosing that they prefer to look at a smaller screen necessarily. Mm-hmm. Again, it's the content that's available on those devices that's not available on the TV. So, you know, I think the 4K TV makers will happily continue on making these huge TVs because there's not an issue. It's not the fact that kids are watching on tablets is not going to take away the fact that they're going to want to watch other content on the 4K TVs, especially if they're going to be able to watch internet content. So all you need is an Apple TV or something like that to bring your internet into the TV, and I think that is definitely where future TV makers have to going to focus, because if they're just focusing on TV alone, whatever's coming through the airwaves, free to air or through the cable, I mean, it's not enough. You need to they're going to absolutely need to merge with internet. And
well, they'll say movies and or TV shows. So what movies and TV shows would be available online that wouldn't be available on like a traditional TV set? So I don't think that includes like YouTube videos and little multimedia content, things like that.
Well, it's hard to say, isn't it? I didn't read the actual original full study by Deloitte, is it?
Deloitte, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did anyone read that study?
No, I didn't read the study. I'm just in
I'm
the
just
article.
Looking at the chart, yeah, on the bottom of the chart there.
It says movies or TV shows.
But personally, I very rarely turn the TV on. I watch a huge amount of content. Well, I wouldn't say a huge amount, but compared to the TV, most of the stuff I watch is online. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily television shows that I'm watching online. I'm watching sort of Art Deco stuff, personal movies that other, you know, individual movie makers are making that aren't available on the TV because they're not big names. Uh-huh. Vimeo, for example, there's heaps of good movies on there. Archive.org, there's tons on there. YouTube's heaps of stuff on there that I watch. Political commentaries, personal takes on things, reviews of stuff. I found all of the personally user-generated content a lot more exciting and interesting to watch than anything that's on television. Mm-hmm. I find whenever I sit down to watch something on television, including movies, the last movie I watched was, I don't know, several years ago. I very rarely watch a movie. Because every time I do, I just get, it's so boring. The content is all the same. The plots have done the death. They're just, there's nothing new. It's all bells and whistles and flashing lights and special effects. And I just get bored with it. It's not really engaging at all.
I guess that's the great thing about the internet is there's something for everyone. So
exactly.
Exactly.
Totally different place. I mean, on the TV, everything's very much the same. It's all been filtered, and okayed by the television companies, and it's bland, to be honest.
It's funny to your point, Vin, that actually in the study, Deloitte calls the trailing millennials, refers to them as digital omnivores. So, yeah. You know, they're not, you know, again, they don't care how it's coming, 360, Netflix, however they're getting it, they're going to find the content and kind of be, I think, really platform agnostic in that way.
Andrew, what about you?
A lot of the points have really been covered. The reason I think TV's hanging on is that, because Chris said the live events, I mean, sporting events are really the only things I watch on TV still. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I haven't actually ever purchased a cable plan in my life. I've streamed everything for my entire life. But I'll go to like bars or something to watch football games and things like that. So live events, I can see that is going to keep the TV going strong. But the only reason I think it's really hanging around is that and the infrastructure that it has in place. Because
but live events, though, I mean, the internet is way more suited to live events than television.
Live sporting events, though, you know, like here in the States, it's hard to really watch like maybe an NFL game or an NBA game live on the computer unless if you have some type of special plan or watching an illegal feed.
And I think the bandwidth also is very intensive. Yeah. I get a lot of lag when I'm trying to watch sporting events online. I just think the infrastructure that actual television has set up is more suited to something like that. And that's the only reason I think it's really hanging on. It's because, I mean, the internet connection and bandwidth quality across the globe is very spotty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very very reliable if you're watching it over the regular cable infrastructure. But that being said, I love the choices that are available to you when you're streaming, and that's the main reason that I've never purchased a cable plan, is because I don't really want to be, you know, held down by a schedule. Mm-hmm. Like, to just be able to pick what I want to watch it right now, and it's the convenience factor, I think, that drives people to that.
Well, it's interesting what I've seen. And you're right, I think a lot of it has to do with convenience. What I've seen of the trend of people in their early 20s, at least from what I have noticed personally, is that they are, even though there's a TV right in front of them that has a Chromecast and a Roku attached to it, they're still opting to hop on their MacBook or whatever it is, or their iPad, and watch Netflix and watch or whatever it is, just to have that right in front of you. And I think what it comes down to is the convenience, right? You're ready with this product, you're ready with this laptop, and it's or whatever it is, this media device, and it's just you watching, and it's just quick, just to pull it up and lay in bed and have it with you. And I think that that might be why a lot of people are kind of doing it that way. It's just easier, quicker, more convenient, and it's just a screen that's large enough to, with at least with maybe like a 15-inch screen, 13-inch screen, to have on your lap and actually enjoy the show. But then when it comes to a large TV, you know, I mean, I can see that being fantastic, especially 4K television, for a great type of film that you want to watch, or if it's something with you know, like Star Trek, like a, you know, like that would look amazing on a TV like that, or live sports. Oh my gosh, I would love to watch that on a 4K TV. I'd feel like I'd be right in the game with the guys, you know. So I think it'd be a lot of fun. So I think there's definitely a place there, but it's interesting just to see the trend that changes to handheld devices going forward. And I do think a lot of it is accessibility, definitely.
I think it's going to take a lot to squash the whole cable TV infrastructure, and that's really that whole big beast right there is what's just keeping them hanging on this long.
Well, I mean, they're protected in the U.S. You know, they're protected as monopolies. That's only now starting to chip away at that a little bit. So, I mean, there's a lot of history and inertia in television, cable television as a commodity, you know, that's protected. So you're absolutely right, Andrew. I think it's going to take a long time for that to fade.
Let's move on to the next story. This one I think is really cool because I love robots, and it is from Sky.com, and it is called Robot Revolution Drives Pittsburgh Revival. And this story is all about robots, basically, and you know, right now in to talk about Pittsburgh and specifically here in the States, that its population is growing. The city's unemployment rate, which was at one point 17.1% in 1983, is now 6.2%. And they say a lot of this has been due to a high-tech revolution in the area. But one thing that they do have is an amazing robotics team in Pittsburgh. And the main reason I wanted to bring up the story is because these robots are just so great. So there's one, for example, that is called Chimp. And Chimp is a robot that can have a major impact on our world. It was developed in the aftermath of the Fukushima nuclear disaster as an answer to solve the problem of not being able to send humans into terribly dangerous circumstances without a huge risk to one's death, right? So there's a lot of places, if there's a toxic area, we can't send a human into that environment, but we can definitely send a robot. And this particular one, Chimp, it has a lot of strength, balance, and manipulation skills, so it could be used to shut down nuclear plants with its skills. So that was developed. Another one that they have is one that is in the shape of a snake, and it allows it to turn and crawl up and really get into places. It works, moves kind of like just like a snake, but really get into places that a human can't get into. So definitely seeing where robots can really be helpful to us, right? And not necessarily detrimental, where we see a lot of sci-fi films where we're afraid that robots are going to take over the world and come and, you know, take over the human race, right? But from what I'm seeing, that these guys are just here to help us, and the way that they're engineering these particular ones is to really just help humans go places where they can't go right now, and do risky jobs for us, and then save some lives in the process. So I wanted to open this story up to, let's start with Vin first. Vin, what is your take on robotics?
Oh, I have been obsessed with robotics since I was a very, very small child. I was almost killed by a robot, actually. Mm-hmm. but that's another story. yeah, it's a fascinating story. The snake robot is interesting. I can't remember where it is that I saw this. I think I just did some searching after reading this story to have a look at some videos. And the snake one doesn't just wriggle around like a snake, which is quite amazing in itself. I saw it slither over to the guy's leg, crawl, and then wrap itself around his ankle and then just crawl up his leg, not as a snake would, but by, you know, if you could imagine the snake sort of just rolling over on itself. Mm-hmm. So it just sort of, once it wrapped around his leg, it just then just rolled its individual components, sections of its body, so that it just sort of rolled up his leg. It was quite amazing. So the versatility of things like that snake robot is amazing. You also see those ones where they're sort of self-replicating, or they self-associate, I don't know what the word is, but they build their little components that can build together mm-hmm. and work with each other. I mean, that's where I think the robotics gets really fancy, when you actually have more than one robot, like a team working together.
Like a collaboration.
Autonomously, them. Yeah.
Yep.
And of course, the drones are, you know, when you see those little drones working as a team, building stuff, you know, they look like little mud wasps building a mud nest, you know. And I could just imagine on the moon or Mars or somewhere, just letting these drone robots go for it with the existing materials on the planet to maybe one day actually build a city before we even get there.
Oh, wow. That would be incredible. That would be incredible. So do you have any fear of robots, thinking, you know, based upon all the sci-fi films we've seen?
Not based on the sci-fi films, but there are fears, real fears. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember years and years ago when they said, you know, the robots are going to be in factories, they're going to be making cars, and it's going to be so great because we'll have so much more free time. Well, that's obviously not going to happen.
Right.
What's going to happen is the people will be out of a job. You know,
exactly.
It's not like all of the benefits go to the individual people. They go to the owners of the manufacturing plant or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. So so I can see more people getting put off out of work by robots, and I guess that's the most impacting negative aspect I can think of.
Yeah, I think when they use robots to do chores that humans can do and do tasks that humans can do, then that might not be so great. But when they're using them to do things that we can't do, then that's...
Yeah, like the car manufacturing business, for example, is much more automated with all of the robots that they have in the car manufacturing business compared to, say, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
There were a lot of workers, a lot of human workers. So,
Andrew, what's your thought on this?
Like you said, definitely think it's a great thing. It's getting the upper echelon of our educated society, I think, is getting more into it. Obviously, it says like they chose Pittsburgh because of the high density of engineering students coming out of Pittsburgh. It's definitely getting them a job. I don't know about the little guys, you know, the grunts, the lesser educated folks, or maybe start losing jobs pretty soon due to some of the things that robots can do.
Right.
But definitely, I mean, these things like the robot that can chimp, you said, that could go into, you know, places like the Fukushima nuclear disaster and things like that. Definitely a great advancement. Very expensive, I think, based on what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But that comes with time, though, really. But like the job I do, with the company that I work for, I guess a lot of it could be done with a computer, and a lot of it is done with a computer. A lot of what I do is just spot checking after the computer does its work. So I kind of relate to it in that way. Like, it's something that, like, if you have a simple job that maybe a robot could do, maybe you could have like a person checking to make sure it did the correct job afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure if we didn't have this computer system that we have now, we'd have maybe three times as more people working and doing this job. Really what we do is just spot check. So yeah, I guess it did put a lot of people out of work, but people are getting more educated now. A college education is more standard.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think this has a lot to do with it too.
Yeah. Well said. That's a great point. And you're right. It is putting people out of jobs, but at the same time, there's new roles out there, right? There's, with the evolution of society or of our times, there's definitely new things that will be developed. So maybe those older roles no longer need to exist, but something new is right around the corner or is here now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. How about you, Chris?
I absolutely love this story for a lot of reasons, but it's really, this is a fun story about these robots and what they're doing at Carnegie Mellon, but it's really part of a huge deeper trend that is starting to really take a lot of time and attention from some very smart people right now, and I think Vin touched a little bit on that. You know, just in the last probably 3 days, I've read several different, you know, papers by economists and politicians really seriously talking about a what's called a basic income in this country, and not unemployment, not Social Security, but just paying people because you're alive, because you're here. And the reason that they're even talking or thinking about things like this that would have been politically you know, suicidal even just a few years ago is because of what we see, kind of the tip of the iceberg of this article. You know, Google, you know, they have the Google X division. A lot of people don't realize they've bought actually averaged buying more than one company per week since 2010. And just here recently, almost all of their acquisitions, and some of these are in, most of them were in the billions, have been for robotics. Now, if you know a little bit about those guys and their plans, you know, this isn't, they're setting themselves up for 10, 5, 10, 20 years from now with Google X. And they're buying companies like DeepMind, General Dynamics. I mean, these Boston Dynamics, I meant to say. I mean, these are the absolute leaders in the field. So I, what I'm trying to look at and figure out is the convergence. Because like earlier, Jen, when you said, are you scared of robots like in the sci-fi movies? Well, a robot's just it's just a thing. It's just metal and wire and whatever. It's the software.
Right.
That's what... That's what the whole thing is. So, I mean, even in Terminator, it was Skynet. It wasn't like a random, you know, it wasn't a Roomba somewhere that got mad. It was the entire, you know, neural net, which is essentially what this is. You know, becoming self-aware.
Yeah.
And you know, and I'm not gonna. I mean, Google's head of research. Is kind of a crazy guy, and he talks about the singularity, and he get from Werner Vinge, whatever, and that might happen in 20 years. We might be all, you know, hybrids that we can't even recognize. But I think much more to the point, though, is that, you know, okay, when you had people, when it was horses and carriages, so you had this incredible nationwide, you know, force of employment of people who took care of horses, and they had to scoop up. Well, I don't know if there's a lot of scooping up based on pictures I see, but, you know, shoeing them and doing all this stuff and taking care of these horses. And then you had Henry Ford come along, and he said, okay. And, you know, his famous, if I'd asked people what they wanted, they would have told me a faster horse. So I gave him a car. And so is that what's going to happen again? Is it going to be that kind of seismic shift? However, I think where the historical, all the historical ways that you can compare it just completely breaks down is it doesn't take you, this, you can take the same person with almost the same training at that time and show him how to work in Henry Ford's factories, because but you can't take people to do what these robots and these programs are going to do. There's actually going to be a huge gap there. So what are they going to do? And I think that's why they're starting to look at these other things, like, you know, we can't just have people, you know, even if we pay them, we can't have millions of people sitting around with free time on their hands.
Right.
I mean, that's not, you know, that's not going to be a recipe for society success. Or how are we going to address this? And where is Google, you know, people like Google or Musk at Tesla, and some of the things he's got going, people like that, what is really their thinking in the boardroom? Where is the convergence between the hardware, you know, and the software? I mean, they paid billions and billions of dollars for DeepMind. You know, some of the most advanced. I mean, you know, IBM's renting out Watson, and I mean, that's cool. They're renting it out to cure cancer in some cases. But these are companies that you don't even know the levels. And now they have access to Google's data centers. How much is that going to push it along? I think it's fascinating. I think every generation and every person likes to think that they live in some sort of unique time, and clearly that's not true. However, I think in this particular sense, it's going to be very interesting in the next 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
And the snake thing that Vin just described absolutely gave me chills.
Yeah.
It really did. Although I know exactly what he's talking about, I think it's cool. I mean, that perception also overcoming that. I mean, you know, remember Honda's robot, Asimo?
Mm.
Remember how harmless he looked and nice? And I mean, you know, that's what they're going to have to do. I'm looking right now at a clip of Boston Dynamics, this huge robot walking across rocks and not falling down. And he looks like he's coming to kill me through the screen. And there's going to be... Yeah. There's gonna be a lot of work for public relations and marketing too for these, you know. And I guess they're gonna start soft with Amazon delivering, you know, your shoes to you with a drone, which I can't wait for.
But, yeah, that is actually the very scary element of the robotics is the huge war industry. You know, like we've already got drones that are murdering people without any trial, without any cause, more civilians being murdered through that drone program being run by Obama than any, you know, than any militants or anything. There's more women and children and wedding parties being hit by these drones. So what's going to happen when these drones become autonomous? And the thing you were just describing, I think, was that pack horse that sort of is designed to carry a big load to follow the soldier as they walk through, you know, rough terrain. This huge big thing the size of a horse can carry these huge big loads, but what happens when that becomes weaponized and autonomized so that, you know, these making decisions based on whether the guy's wearing a turban or something, you know, something like that.
Who's scary. Funding all this is DARPA.
Yeah.
All these companies are coming out of Defense Advanced Research Program. So, we can't fool ourselves. I mean, that is what's driving the innovation, weaponized.
Wow.
Yep. It's sad, isn't it?
All I can think about is Tony Stark and...
Who's Tony Stark?
Tony Stark.
Iron Man.
You know, when his Iron Man suits were turned to evil. And but no, yeah, you're right. That's... It's going to take a lot, I think, also for just humans just to wrap our heads around all of this, right? It can be overwhelming because you don't know what direction it's going to go in. If it is being built by, you know, defense departments and that's what is driving this, then it is, I don't know. You just never want to think anything will be used as a weapon, but I guess we have to be realistic. So,
I mean, the thing with computers is they're only going to do exactly what you tell them to do. Mm-hmm. So the only people you can hold accountable for mishaps like that are the people that are actually programming it.
Exactly.
Yeah. But with the new levels of programming, I think that when they start they'll actually have these autonomous devices in the field making decisions very much like a human would. And they're programming more of a quantum probability sort of mindset where it's taking probabilities and it's making decision. That's the scary thing to me. Because I understand there's a guy in Cleveland flying the one that's over Afghanistan. Maybe he's tired and he makes a bad decision. We can fix that. But how do you fix it was flying by itself and it launched missiles at a wedding party? You know, what sort of language are you even using to build those decision-making triggers in? And they're not. It's not going to be transparent. Hmm. But I'm all about if they can get one of these to like make drinks and take. I mean, they can have theirs if I can have mine.
That's funny. Yeah, I wouldn't mind having a one like that. What was in that film? Was it iRobot or? The film with the old man and the robot that they had to take care of him. You guys know. I think it's iRobot. Anyway.
I don't know. Well, not the one with Robin Williams.
No. all right. Well, let's move on to the next story. This one's coming from Engadget. And I wanted to get your opinion on this. They have developed a system that can tell if you're lying by looking at your eyes. So it is called an eye-based lie detection system, and it has, you know, we've always kind of thought, well, can something like that actually be real? Can it work? Well, there's a company called Conversus. I'm sorry, Converus. I mispronounced it. And they are releasing iDetect, and it's hardware and software that helps companies find out if their workers are lying or telling the truth. So the system revolves around an SMI-made camera that monitors pupil dilation as well as the positions of eyes and the positions of your head. So if you look shifty when you're answering questions, your supervisors will know within minutes. And so, you know, it's not a perfect system. They claim 85% accuracy, which could allow for some false positives. But it's definitely worth checking out, I guess. It's coming out in Mexico first, actually, in April. So I
just say that I laughed out loud when I read that part at the end there.
That is
all I could think of was like those shady Mexican
in
prisons.
Mexico, yeah. It's interesting. Why Mexico? Why not everywhere else? I don't know. Maybe they're just testing it in Mexico. Who knows? But you know, my first thing with this is I don't like it one bit because I don't want some software to tell somebody whether or not I'm telling the truth or lying. First of all, I tell the truth the majority of the time. The only time I might is if I'm fibbing about, you know, how are you doing? Oh, I'm great. Or, you know, or you never, it's just typical fibs that people say, you know, I don't know. like how they're feeling or whatever it is. And so, but I don't want to have some type of software trying to dictate whether or not I'm telling the truth or lying. What if it's wrong? What if it says I'm lying when I'm telling the truth? You know, it's really creepy. I don't like it. What do you guys think?
Well, 85% accuracy is not bad for a starting point. Mm-hmm. It can only get better, right? So I imagine that's just going to maybe go up to about 90-95 or something. Pretty quickly once they do some real world testing.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't know. I wonder how this is actually going to be implemented. If you know, I just struggle a little bit to understand in what situation this would be actually used by a boss wanting to know if his workers are lying.
I was wondering the same thing too. I mean, I've never ever had a boss, oh, are you lying or telling the truth? They just, you know, you're honest with your boss. Yeah. You're honest about who lies to their boss and what would you have to lie about? I don't understand. I could see this maybe being used for crime in with police. You know,
that's what I was thinking. Yeah. It'd be a lot more useful in that. Like maybe if you have a court case or something and you're like, here, when we interviewed the defendant and you show the jury the statistics from iDetect and here, use these as like
exactly.
I don't know if it, like, the way the article came off, it just seemed kind of creepy.
It's weird. It's a little bit weird. Or maybe when you're trying to catch your spouse for cheating, like, hey, how are you? You're doing like a Skype with them, right? Or a FaceTime or whatever, some type of video, you know, hangout message, whatever. And you're like, hey.
But you say that you're a little bit creeped out by it, Jen. How would you feel if the same technology was used for some other reason, so that you could have your eyes being tracked on what you're looking at work, as long as it wasn't to determine your guilt over something?
I still don't think I would like it, you know. And I even have a piece of black tape over the camera on my work computer, but I don't know.
Because isn't it actually built into Google Glass? Doesn't that have ability to track your eye movement to tell where you're looking?
Only when it's activated. So if I tilt it, then it will turn on the system, and then it can tell. You know, it can tell if I wink my eye, if I close my eye. It doesn't. It's kind of with the head tilt is how it responds. But that doesn't mean it won't soon be able to do that. And I'm sure there's a way for it to do that now. But
I thought the concept was that it determines whether or not you're looking at the screen or whether you're looking elsewhere. I'm not really sure.
No, it only really engages if you receive content or if you tilt your head or if you touch it. And then it will turn on. So it doesn't. Okay. Yeah, it doesn't really know. But, you know, there is that in some of the devices, the Android devices, when you're looking at it, it knows when you're looking at it, and it will kind of track your eye movement. And even computers are built that way too, where there's some computers that track the eye movement.
So. Yeah, like for reading, for example, would be a great obvious example where you want to be able to just turn the page without looking, and if it can turn the page for you when you get to the end of the line.
Yeah, exactly.
Excuse me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Chris, what's your take?
I think it's preposterous. I mean, here's why. The whole scientific backing that is looking at is saying that changes in the behavior of your eye because the fact that deception causes a cognitive load and that it forces movement in the pupil of your eye. Basically, 85% is garbage. And as far as legal, I mean, you know, it's going to be just another form of the polygraph. As a matter of fact, it's the same scientists who computerized the polygraph in 91 were the ones who made this. So Convaris is actually licensing this now. The SMI, Red OEM Eye Tracker technology that's powering it is some pretty powerful stuff. But the algorithms they're laying on top of it to try to actually extract meaning from it are not as far from some sort of peer-reviewed knowledge as you can get. Basically, I think that they are trying to just have kind of a really great thing for businesses and governments to use. They talk about using it to monitor large groups of people. I don't see how that's possible, or we're a long way from that technology. But it's interesting, in one of the press releases, they actually talked about its potential as a deterrent. And I think essentially that's what this is going to be, at least in the short term, is it's going to be a behavioral modification, because most people don't know about technology to the level of, you know, Vin or Eugen. So they're not going to know the things I started laughing because I left Andrew out, but all of us to the level of technology that we know. And so what people are going to do, they're going to see this and they're going to just think that it does, it's like magic. I mean, people can't even explain how a microwave works. So they're going to really think that this works, and it's going to work as a behavioral modification and deterrent. It makes sense. I was like, Mexico, what are they? And then I thought, well, that, you know, more billionaires live in Mexico than any other country in the world. So it's extremely, extremely polarized in their wealth. But it's very wealthy areas and companies down there. CEMEX, the richest family. So they're actually, I get what they're doing down there to try to do that. In this country, in probably, I would say, Australia, a lot of those places, you know, it's going to be difficult to really deploy this because it just doesn't have the accuracy. Now, Vin, to your point, if it gets to 95, 96, 98% accuracy, who knows then? It's a race to the bottom to see in how many ways probably technology like that would be implemented.
Like with differences in people's personalities and things like that. I mean, every human is wired differently, so to speak. Do you ever think we can actually get to that sort of accuracy? It doesn't really seem plausible to me.
Well, it's based on dilation of the iris, so I would have actually thought that it would be more applicable to maybe testing drug use or something than as a lie detector. But that's a good point about that it acting as like those security cam stickers that you can see in some shops and people's homes where they can't afford a security camera system, so they just buy the sticker and stick it in the window, and it deters burglars. So yeah, maybe it is something like that, which is a bit ridiculous, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the idea, both of you. Actually, I think all three of you, especially you, Chris. You were saying that it was used as a deterrent. And I didn't even think about that. And you're right. I think if they knew that was happening, just like if people know that their employer is reading their email or accessing their text messages, then they're not going to maybe say what the other things that they should, that they might be saying, you know.
That's a really good point.
They'll be more cautious about it. Right. So, well, all right. Well, that wraps it up for our news stories. And now I would love to talk with Vincent about Vintuitive.com and Keyboard Kung Fu. So, Vin, you have developed a new series called Keyboard Kung Fu. And first, let's talk just a bit about Vintuitive.com. So you have Vintuitive.com, and that's where Keyboard Kung Fu is housed, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, Vintuitive, that's my business. I'm a web developer, so I develop websites for small businesses, but more so moving into sort of promotion of their social network systems or building those social media networks for them if they don't already have one, and creating strategies around that to promote their business.
Okay, great.
And we
talked with you all about Vintuitive.com on an earlier episode. So what I would really love to learn about is, but I just wanted you to talk about it briefly here, there, just to let people know.
Yeah.
But so you developed something called Keyboard Kung Fu. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, it's an idea I've had for a while. It's really simply just a series of keyboard shortcuts that are delivered just one every week on a Friday. So that you can increase your productivity and enjoy your time on the Mac a little bit more. It is Mac only at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was something I hesitated to, that put me off actually launching this sooner, was because I didn't want to sort of, you know, deny the rest of the people. Anyway, I'm a Mac user, and I have a lot of Mac friends, Mac user friends, and a lot of clients of mine have actually moved over to the Mac. So it seems a good time to kick it off.
I think it's fantastic. I know a couple of the basic keyboard shortcuts, but I don't nearly use as many. And I've seen people that just don't even use a mouse, right? And they just use all keyboard shortcuts. So This is pretty good. This is pretty great. And I know, Chris, you're a Mac user. Or no, you're not. Andrew, you're not either. Or are you guys?
No. Last time I used a Mac, I think, was maybe like 7th grade.
How about you, Chris?
I've got an HP Windows 8.1.1 Pro laptop up. And then behind that, I've got an iMac, and on my lap I've got an iPhone 5, and
okay,
over there is an HTC. I'm everywhere. So
you're everywhere.
I'm excited actually about this, because Mac, I think, builds more of this functionality into the, Apple builds more of it into their software. To me, there seems to be more of this available, these shortcuts. So I think this is awesome.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have got an iPhone or an iPad and maybe come into the Mac from that avenue, because the Mac has actually sort of really jumped in popularity in the last few years. But, you know, keyboard shortcuts, I don't know about you guys, but whether it's Windows or Mac, it's always a bit of a chore to learn them, and it basically never happens for a lot of people, because, you know, someone prints out a whole list of them and they stick them up next to their computer or whatever. I mean, that's what I've done in the past a couple of times. And I don't know, they just get forgotten about, and I never actually, you know, you have to practice the shortcuts in order to remember them.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, you know, I got to come up with an easy way to get these into my brain so that I can remember them and use them. And I do have a teaching background, and I used to teach basic computing to adult learners, and part of adult learning, it's actually a general sense of learning, is that if you can create sort of visual hooks and as much senses as you can cram into it, then the more it's going to be assimilated in and remembered. And it's the best way of teaching or learning something is to have these visual cues. So it really just started off as creating a photograph of my hand on the keyboard. And I thought, well, visually, that's really easy to just lock into your mind rather than a string of letters.
So why did you go with the term Kung Fu?
Good question. You know, Kung Fu, to be honest, it came from the TV series in the 70s called Kung Fu. with was it David Carradine? And
is that where that song came from? I know Kung Fu. I know Kung Fu. I know Kung Fu.
I'm not familiar with that song, but I don't think so.
All right, I'll play
I've never heard that song before.
You've never heard that song? I know Kung Fu. I know.
I know one called Everybody Was Kung Fu Fighting.
Right, right, right.
Everybody was Kung Fu Fighting.
She knows that one.
Yeah.
You were just dancing just now, weren't you?
I was bobbing my head a little bit.
No, you know, so the TV series was actually supposed to have Bruce Lee in it originally. I think it was Bruce Lee's idea. And it was sort of a good thing that it didn't because it was more of a non-fighting show, really. It was all about Taoism to me and teaching the philosophy of Kung Fu rather than the fighting of it. And when you look at the definition of the meaning of the word Kung Fu, it's actually nothing to do with fighting. It's acquiring or achievement through hard work. So I thought, you know, through your efforts you can acquire a skill is basically the meaning of Kung Fu. So applying that to the keyboard,
that's
so you have then keyboard Kung Fu.
You can use Kung Fu with everything then.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you do, you know.
Cooking Kung Fu.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's where the term, you must have heard people talk about them being a social media ninja or something
like
that.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
You know, this all relates back to that.
That's what they call us at work, social media ninjas.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that. They're used a lot in job titles.
Yeah.
Drives it crazy.
It sure
exactly.
is.
Yeah, sure. And so ninjutsu, kung fu, similar. Same sort of thing.
That's interesting.
But I'm also very interested in Taoism, and I'm very interested in applying Taoist principles to business. And now this was something I think was touched on in the early 80s, what's the guy's name? Getting Things Done, David Allen.
Oh, David Allen, yeah.
You know, he has a similar sort of approach, and I'm a big fan of his work and the Getting Things Done principle. So merging that with Taoist principles just seems very natural and normal. So this is a bit of a foray into that, is to approach learning the keyboard shortcuts with those principles.
Hmm. Very good. What kind of keyboard shortcuts have you gone over so far?
I've actually received a little bit of negative criticism over the fact that I'm starting with very basic things like cut and paste.
Well, I think it should be. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't know how to do that. My parents don't know how to do that.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And you've got to really start at the beginning. You know, you can't just jump into the exciting ones straight off. So,
right.
So that's fair enough. And really it's where I'm promoting these. So, you know, I actually went into the Cult of Mac G+ community, the Google Plus. Mm-hmm. And of course those guys are sort of hardcore fans of the Mac system. So of course they know all that stuff, you know. So perhaps I was preaching to the wrong people, you know, and that's okay. So
that's
just
why.
You know. Yeah, I'm spreading it wide and fast. I'm just testing at the moment in the early stages of where, you know, where it's sticking the best and who's going to take advantage of it the most.
Yeah. So maybe so even places like, I'm just trying to think of where else you can kind of spread at least the more well-known ones to the people that don't know it, you know. I mean, how could you get that message out there? Like I was just saying, I know my parents would really benefit from something like this, and I can definitely share it with them. But, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, one of the guys in one of my communities on G+ said, wow, I've been using a Mac for years, and he's a video editor. And he didn't even know about the command tab to switch between open programs, which is really basic. So great, you know, he benefited from that simple shortcut.
I love these little tips like this, and you know, they're so helpful. And there's so many things that I don't know that I should know but I don't know. You know
exactly, and you feel a little bit embarrassed, like wow, you can command Q to quit a program. Wow, I had no idea. You know, because on the Mac, a lot of newcomers don't realize that when you hit that little cross, it doesn't actually close the program. It just closes that instance of it or that window.
Mm-hmm.
And the program's actually still running, eating up your resources. So,
Command. I didn't know that either. Command Q.
Yeah, well, there you go. Nope, see, you're a seasoned Mac user and you
Exactly. And you didn't know that. I've never known.
So there's lots of these little things that we don't know. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great object lesson with Jen just then, Vin. And I think that Kung Fu, if you really build on that, when you go into, I mean, they teach you the very basics first. And you have the chapter 63 of Tao Te Ching, playing difficult tasks through the simplest tasks. I mean, really, that's it's kind of like a whole, it's a whole mindset that you, it's not so much that, yeah, you're going to learn these shortcuts, but it's like being mindful throughout your whole day, doing these things and kind of approaching your whole work differently. I love it. I think it's great.
Oh, thank you very much. You've hit it right on the head. That is exactly what I'm trying to do, is as I was saying before, is to bring these Taoist principles into your life and into your business practice. Not just to remember a shortcut for a keyboard combination, but to apply it to every part of your life. So I do actually finish every single shortcut with a new line from the Tao Te Ching that applies specifically to that shortcut. So today's was Command L, which highlights the URL, the address in your URL, the URL in your address bar. And then you can cut and copy and paste or whatever you want to do with that. And
I didn't know that either.
well, that's today's one. So you should definitely go and have a look at all the ones that you might have missed, Jen, if you haven't seen them all yet.
I need to, definitely. Command X, C, and V, I know that one. Command Q, I did not know. Command H, what's that?
That's a really interesting one, actually, because it's a very, very, very specific technique to use with Mac. You would never do this on Windows. On Windows, you tend to just minimize things when you're finished with them. Mm-hmm. On the Mac, if you Command H, you actually hide it, and it just disappears. It doesn't minimize it, but it keeps the program running, but it just disappears. And then you can Command Tab back to that program. So if you Command Tab, brings up the list of programs that you've got open, and you can keep hitting Tab while you're holding the Command down to get to the program that you want. So it's actually a practice that you sort of have to embrace when you come to the Mac. Well, you don't have to. A lot of people don't, but it's very beneficial if you do, because hiding programs and then Command Tabbing to them is something that I'm constantly doing all day, every day. And just makes your life so much easier if you don't have to think about minimizing and things. You just Command H, Command Tab, and you're back.
That's great. Have you known all this all along, or did you kind of study up on these before starting this?
I feel like I'm one of the slowest of all people of learning these. And again, sort of that's where it all came from, was for my own benefit, was to try and learn these, because mm-hmm. I just can't learn them. I don't know why. I do know, as I've just been describing why, because they're just, bland, just letters on a page if you don't have anything to just stick, no hooks. So I probably only still know, maybe 10, not many.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so as we progress, these will all be learning things for me. In fact, Command L was one that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah, and it takes a little while to get into the habit, too, of using these. So that's why I am only doing one every week, so you continue using that throughout the week.
Yeah,
that makes consolidate.
Sense. Yeah, don't overwhelm people with all of them all at once, right? Yeah. So how are you pushing the messages out?
You mean what platforms?
Yeah, what platforms, yeah.
Well, I'm using Flickr, actually. It's one that people don't think of a lot. Flickr's been around for a long time, and I've always loved Flickr. There's a lot of reasons why. One is that the community is huge. There's so many great, engaging communities on Flickr.
Mm-hmm.
And so I post a photo up there, because it is obviously photo-based, these techniques. And with a link to my website, so they can come and just click on and read all about it. The image will grab their attention. They can click and read it. The other thing with Flickr is that it has Creative Commons licensing built into it, and I think if you can give your photos away, if they're appealing and attractive and likely to be used by someone, give them away and put a Creative Commons license on it, it actually serves as an advertisement for you. So I've got my website on every photo. If they get reused, and I'm saying, please, please do reuse them. Don't even have to ask me. I'm giving you permission now.
That's nice.
Then, yeah, then they're basically advertising for me for free.
Advertising for you. Yeah, exactly.
And so every photo I put on Flickr is always on an open Creative Commons license. So, but I'm also sending it out to Twitter, my G+, you know, all the usual places.
I should maybe share your Flickr photos on Get Nerdy with it as a tip. I don't know. What do you think about that? And then link
Absolutely.
It back to you? Yeah?
For sure, for sure.
I think those would be some great nerdy tips.
Yep.
Yeah.
I would be happy to help you with that because yeah, one of the things that is a little bit annoying about Creative Commons is, or with Flickr, is that people see it and they go, oh, Creative Commons, that means I can do whatever I like with this picture. Swipe, and they take it, and they don't give you any accrediting.
Yeah,
you know,
they need
don't
to credit.
Attribute
yeah.
Yeah. And you have to link back it to the license as well to show people, hey, this is why I'm allowed to use it, and therefore promotes the Creative Commons licensing as well,
mm-hmm.
for those that don't know about it. So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, we'll definitely have to get that set up then. That'd be great.
And I'm using a consistent shortcut, hashtag as well, KB Kung Fu.
I saw that, so, KB Kung Fu. Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, everyone uses, a lot of services now use hashtag. So it's another benefit, you know, but by putting these on Twitter, I have over 2,000 followers, but most of those are probably not following what I'm writing anyway, as is the case normally on Twitter. But the hashtag is the most powerful aspect of Twitter. And so, you know, if you can check out that hashtag along with how to and Mac, which is what I usually add, then, you know, anyone searching for how to do something on a Mac is going to see these.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I know so much can be done through searching with hashtags. I loved it. We had Saul Fleischman on as a guest with the Right Tag, and we had an interesting talk with him, Andrew and I did. And all about hashtags. So, and also you use Vine too, right?
Oh yeah, Vine. I've actually been. I haven't done the last couple on Vine, but all of them up until the last two, I think, have been on Vine. And Vine is excellent for this because it's 6 seconds, and you just show the keyboard command, and then you show what's on the screen, what's happening, and then bang, if that's it. That's all you need to show, and that's 6 seconds is fine for that.
And can so you
then, repeats and it repeats.
It repeats, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like an animated GIF. You just sit there watching it and it just keeps going. So if you miss something, it's like, oh, that's what he's doing, right.
It's perfect.
Yeah, and then I grab that Vine and embed it in the post.
I was wondering, and you can also share that Vine on Flickr too, right? Because Flickr does films, right? So
Yeah, I considered that and
Or does it save as a GIF or it saves as a, you know what? What kind of file is it when you share a Vine?
I can't remember. Is it MIV? No, MPEG?
Yeah, I was thinking maybe it was AVI.
It's one of the standard ones, but yeah, it can totally. I keep all of my Vines because I use Dropbox on my device, on my iOS device, on both of them, and it automatically just sends everything up the camera upload feature. Just all the Vines end up in the camera uploads folder anyway, so I tend to just save all of my videos source files as well. Mm-hmm. So I could very easily upload that to Flickr, sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't want to saturate. I don't know. I just have a feeling that that's a little bit spammy to sort of repost everything everywhere. I try to make each platform have its own sort of format.
Right, right. Well, cool. Sounds like you definitely have your bases covered with with sharing the lessons online. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, well, you know, something, I mean, I tend to start off with, this did start off just as literally as just a thing. It's like, oh, I'll just take a photo of my hand on the keyboard, that'll be enough, and then I'll post that up, and that'll be that, and it's turned into this much bigger thing. And I actually had some ideas to do assessments as well because, you know, I am a trained trainer, a certified trainer, so I can hand out certificates of. And I was thinking, oh, what if I did, you know, the belts and get people like a rubber belt. And of course, learning, there's all you need the testing aspect of learning to reinforce it. So, you know, at some point I might actually start that and hand out belts to people if there's enough interest.
That's cool. I love it.
Are you a musician, Vin, by any chance?
I am. Yep.
The thing that jumps to my mind, what initially got me into Macs was the DAW software. It was Logic, you know, GarageBand is the gateway drug to Logic. And, you know, in any of the DAW products of Logic, GarageBand, and Cubase, the ones that people were running, they're, all of that workflow is based on shortcuts. It's all based on shortcuts. I mean, it's very hard to be good in Logic Pro if you don't, if you're not a really, really good with the shortcuts. I would just, you know, if you use that or know about it or know someone, that would be a huge, and I think that your whole way that you're teaching with the Tao and all that, I think that would resonate with that demographic a lot. I think that you could get a lot of traction. That's my 2 cents of the night worth one penny.
And that's a really good, that's a good point, because the shortcuts that I'm teaching now are really generic, basic OS, operating system level. When you get into, say, Photoshop and individual programs, then definitely there's a whole batch of commands that are extremely useful. So, yeah, it's a very good point. I hadn't really even thought too much about doing program-specific shortcuts, but it's no shortage, really. Mm. The other aspect I wanted to say about today's lesson is, if you haven't already seen it, make sure you scroll down to the bottom, because it is, I think, the sixth or seventh in the series. Again, we're right at the beginning, but at some point I wanted to consolidate, and now having about six or seven under our belt, pardon the pun, you know, that we can then sort of combine some of them and use them together. For example, the command tab to move to a program, and then to use the command L to highlight the URL in the address bar of that one, then command a copy and paste. You know, you can use all these together to achieve a task. And so at the end of today's, I actually gave a little exercise for people to try, having learnt all of the previous ones, uh-huh, and consolidate them all into one actual exercise, a real-life exercise. And you can actually do that whole thing, which is taking the URL of one browser, moving over to another browser and putting it into that and seeing if the page looks the same in two browsers, something I do a lot of being a web developer.
Well, where's the challenge? I'm on the keyboard conclusion today.
Change of address, right?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm looking at the wrong one. I must be looking at the wrong one. Okay.
Change of address.
I'm looking at sorry about that. Okay.
That's all right.
Yeah, here we go. Thanks, Chris and Ben. All right, cool. Well, I want a belt if I...
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking that little apple with the yin-yang symbol in it would be a nice little thing to go on the ends of the belts.
Yeah, it would be. I love the symbol that you have on here. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Cool. Oh, and the little buttons there, actually sort of comes into the next question.
What kind of software do you recommend for keyboard shortcuts? Do you have anything?
Well, obviously, these shortcuts are requiring no software. It's just the operating system. But yeah, if you're into using the keyboard, one of the things I meant to say before was, you know how I said this all came out of that Kung Fu series?
Yeah.
I meant to send you the video opening the introduction to the series, because It's the grasshopper. It's where the term grasshopper comes from, you know, patience grasshopper. It's because the student who's standing in front of the master who is blind says, how is it that you can see all these things when you're blind? And he says, do you see the grasshopper at your feet? And he's like, what? And, oh, wow, there's a grasshopper at my feet. And he says, yeah, well, you know, how is it that you are not able to hear all these things? Like, you know, he says, when you are able to, he holds out a pebble and he says, take the pebble from my hand. And of course, the student is too slow to do that. And he quickly pulls it away. And he says, when you can take the pebble from my hand, it is time to leave. And so I took that saying and said, when you are able to take the mouse from my hand, and you can operate the keyboard without the mouse, then
you become
the master.
Oh, that's clever.
Convoluted way around
that. I like that. That's clever. You put a lot of thought into this.
Thank you. Yes, I did. But yeah, the software, I mean, there is amazing lots of software that can really extend your use of the Mac. Some of the ones that I use at the time, or one that I just can't do without, is Text Expander. It was the first thing I bought when I when I upgraded to Mavericks a couple of days ago. Because it is so powerful, and it saves so much time. For example, these little buttons in the posts, you know, that you can see where I've got Command L.
Yes.
That's quite a lot of coding around those little things, and so I just made up these little snippets and put them into Text Expander so that I can just write KB command, or KB KMD actually, and the shortcut for the code, you know, all the HTML and styling and CSS is already just pulled in through that. That's a whole snippet I've made of that code, so that when I want to make that button as I'm writing this post, I just go KB KMD, and that code just gets plonked into that line there.
Oh, that's great.
It's like a short code.
Yeah. And so I use it for invoices as well. So I just write INV and bang, a whole invoice gets put out there, and all I have to do is fill in the numbers. Thank you letters, just put TY, bang, a whole thank you letter gets popped into a blank email. It's incredibly useful. URLs, I use it all the time. All the URLs, I just jump up into the address bar and type two letters and I've got whatever it is, you know, for Vintuitive, you know, might be the Vintuitive YouTube channel would be VYT, stuff like that. Obviously, all this works only on my Mac. It doesn't work for anyone else because this is the software is on my Mac.
Right.
But yeah, definitely have a look at Text Expander. It's worth every cent.
Cool.
Have any of you tried Text Expander? You're not
Mac users. I have. I've heard of Smile Software, though. I think Leo Laporte talks about Smile Software on his network.
Yeah. They make a few good programs. But in fact, the Text Expander on iOS is one of my most disappointing purchases. I hate to say that, but it's just the nature. Yeah, it's the nature of iOS that is so locked down that. Yeah. In order to use Text Expander, you sort of copy, paste, and move between apps. And
they have some good shortcuts, right, in there anyway, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
iOS.
They ended up building it in.
Yeah, where you can make it yourself, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Eve is another one.
EVE.
And that's probably more along the lines of the keyboard kung fu, because once you just turn it on and throughout your day as you do stuff, like as I go to close a tab, it'll actually pull up a little growl notification.
Okay.
Saying, oh, to do that, you just do Command T or whatever it is.
Oh, pretty cool. I like that.
Yes. Yeah. So just as you do things, it's like, oh, to close the browser, oh, I didn't know that. And you know, it's just constantly there telling you, oh, there's a keyboard shortcut that does that.
That's cool.
I think that's a free one too, so go grab that. And the only other one I can, there's a couple others I can suggest, but they're getting a bit away from keyboard necessarily, more into sort of productivity saving stuff. Mm-hmm. But Keyboard Maestro,
it can
get very techy. You can do a lot of stuff with it, but it's worth having a look at. I can't remember the price of that one, if it's free or not, but I think if it is. If you do have to pay for it, they give you a trial.
Let's see. There is a trial, it looks like, and there is a license that is $36.
Yeah. Worth having a look at if you're into that sort of thing and using the trial before you decide to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Good tips. Very good tips.
Yeah.
So, do you have any other projects in the works right now? It sounds like you have your hands full with this one. It sounds pretty great as it is.
Thanks. It is a little bit time consuming, but I have hundreds of things always on the boil, always. Something that's completely unrelated, just to take it off topic a bit for a different interest, is you as you know, I come from an ancient Egyptian pyramids type of background.
Right.
I spent probably a good 10-15 years deeply in that world, and became actually quite well known as the world's pyramid guy.
Wow.
And as such, I got asked to join this team, which is called the Earth Pyramid. And yes. If you just go to earthpyramid.org, you can read all about that. That's still ongoing. We've now moved in, for those who don't know, we are building a pyramid, an actual real pyramid. Location hasn't been determined yet, but it will be determined based on costs, essentially. And it is going to be a time capsule. So the concept is to, yeah, it's really about, it's got a sort of multi-pronged function. And one is to sort of bring together the children of the world to start thinking about the future and what they would say to someone in the future if they had the opportunity. And then to give them that opportunity by giving these packs out to all of the schools around the world to say, you know, have a think about it, put your results down on a piece of paper and we'll put them into this box, which will go inside the pyramid. And the latest on the project is that we've moved into music as well now. So music is always a really good way of promoting something and getting people's awareness raised. So So we've got some famous musos involved, and I can't name them because it's just a little bit quiet at the moment. But okay. A couple of them, but we have some songs. If you go to SoundCloud, or the SoundCloud link is on the Earth Pyramid site, we've released a few songs, and they're getting played on BBC, so they're getting some high airplay, which is great. And that one features Morgan Freeman.
Oh, neat.
And we've also got Desmond Tutu involved and just other countries' presidents from around the world, and a lot of letters of support from all over the place.
Very cool.
Yeah, keep tuned onto the SoundCloud page.
Yeah, I just put a link there, and it's and I know I've listened to some of this, so I need to definitely check out the rest that's on here, so I'm a bit behind. But I'm curious, and you and I have spoken with this one-on-one, in regards to the pyramid that you're building, that they're building with the Earth Pyramid Project. Now, from what I've read, there's definitely, I don't know, I've heard of some pyramid technologies where the inside pyramids have some kind of different effects. Have you studied anything about that, or... Would this have any effects in it? I would imagine just something about the shape has some type of effect on the inside when you're in it. Maybe healing effect, or I don't know. That's what I've read. I have not been in one, so I can't attest to it.
There's heaps of stuff like that written about the pyramids, and in fact, that was my earliest memory, was in the 70s as a kid sitting down with my dad. Must have been about 4 or 5, mid-70s. It was the age of Uri Geller and all of those, you know, spoon bending and psychic and all of the pyramid healing stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm waving my hands around as I say this, so it's sort of all a bit loopy. But but my dad sat me down one day and he says, hey, let's build a little cardboard pyramid and put a grape in it and, you know, see if it can preserve it. And so I did. And I didn't, being 4 years old, I didn't really know what preserve meant. But all
give in. Oh, now I'm curious what happened to the grape in the pyramid.
I know. I'm on the Earth Pyramid site. I'm like, this is so cool.
It's very
cool. What happened to the grape?
Well, I know. What happened to the grape? Did it?
Well, I think we can put the line. I mean, yeah. It didn't go bad.
Can we eat the grape?
Can we eat it? This is going to be great for my leftovers when I leave restaurants. I just put it in a pyramid. It'll be fine next week.
Let me see if I can reconnect with him. He definitely dropped off. Well, it looks like we lost Vin and something is happening with the connection. And we will never know what happened to the grape if it is edible today. But, well, definitely you have to get with him offline. So, fellas, are you still there? Chris and Andrew?
Still yes, here.
Ma'am. All right. Well, at least I haven't lost you two. So wonderful. Well, I guess we're actually kind of past our time limit, so we should probably wrap up. But before I go, I want to thank you both for being here with us tonight. And Chris, welcome to the team. You're fantastic. And I look forward to talking with you next week. And can you tell people where we can find you online?
Right now, you can find me online on Twitter under the username Flash Gagnon. So Gagnon. However, I'll have some different things set up next week that'll be more appropriate to the get nerdy with it paradigm. As anyone who's been on my Twitter line would know.
your Twitter, Andrew, you're gonna definitely have to follow Chris. And both vice versa. But Chris's tweets are out there. They're interesting. They're fun.
Entertaining to say the least.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I think I found you on LinkedIn too while I was cruising during that Mac spiel.
Excellent.
Andrew, I always ask you every week, where can folks find you online?
Well, let's see what the show notes say. Where can I find me online?
I think it's going to be at the Cobblecat.
Yes, my Twitter is probably the most relevant to this show, at least. I mean, I don't really use my Google+ anymore. My LinkedIn I've been using a lot more lately. Twitter and LinkedIn. Twitter, the Cobblecat, and my LinkedIn is just Andrew Nels with like the last two letters of my last name cut off.
For Vincent, you can find him at vintuitive.com. And for us, you can find us at getnerdywithit.com and facebook.com/getnerdywithit, google.com/+getnerdywithit, twitter.com/getnerdy_with it. Be certain to follow us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, Podomatic, SoundCloud, and Spreaker, too.
Thank you for listening to Get Nerdy With It. Join us each week as we interview nerds talking about their passions.
Oh, nerds.
And be sure to visit us at GetNerdyWithIt.com.